Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 1157 of the Juice Box Podcast. Carol is a returning guest. She was originally here in episode 586 in an episode titled Body Fire. She's 44 years old. She has type 1 diabetes and a number of other issues that she medicates in certain ways. While you're listening, please remember that nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan or becoming bold with insulin. In today's episode, we're welcoming a new sponsor with a really interesting ad format. Instead of a classic ad, you're going to get a mini interview, just a little 90-second nugget from a slightly longer interview that I did with someone from the Medtronic Champion community. At the very end of the episode, you can hear the entire recording that led to that 90-second chunk. If you have type 1 diabetes or are the caregiver of someone with type 1 and a U.S. resident, please go to t1dexchange.org/juicebox and fill out the survey. When you complete that survey, which you can do in fewer than 10 minutes from your phone, like while you're on the toilet even, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't take that long. You're going to help type 1 diabetes research. You might help yourself. You're definitely going to help somebody else, and you're going to be supporting the Juice Box Podcast. t1dexchange.org/juicebox. Today's episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes, a company that's bringing people together to redefine what it means to live with diabetes. Later in this episode, I'll be speaking with Jalen. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 14. He's 29 now. He's going to tell you a little bit about his story. And then later, at the end of this episode, you can hear my entire conversation with Jalen. To hear more stories with Medtronic Champions, go to MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox or search the hashtag Medtronic Champion on your favorite social media platform. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the Eversense CGM. An implantable 6-month sensor is what you get with Eversense, but you get so much more. Exceptional and consistent accuracy over 6 months, and distinct on-body vibe alerts when you're high or low. On-body vibe alerts? You don't even know what that means, do you? EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. Go find out. You just said something to me that made me laugh, and I was going to describe to you why I was laughing, and then I thought, well, let's record first before I do that. I thought, I'm having her back on the podcast. Like, she was on once, great episode. I'm going to have her back on. There must be a rock solid reason that I'm doing this.
There was two reasons, actually. One was because you were curious about how I was navigating healthcare in Canada, because since my last episode, I had no help. And honestly, 3 years into diagnosis, I still have no help.
Really?
And then the second was you were curious about my trade job, the fact that I smoke weed and I manage my blood sugar, but I don't take pain meds and all I do is use marijuana.
I remember. Okay. So let's give people just a 45-second high-level overview of, you were on episode 586. It was called, Body Fire?
Body Fire, yeah.
Right. Okay. Give them enough of your backstory that we can go forward.
So in June 3rd, actually, 2022, I was diagnosed with type 1 LADA the hard way through Emerge. And within 10 hours of being in Emerge, I was told that due to my GAD testing and my insulin testing, I was a type 1 diabetic. And due to COVID, I was kicked out of Emerge with insulin to use as directed. And no one ever gave me direction. I taught myself insulin with a YouTube video and an orange. And I found you.
A YouTube video.
And when I was diagnosed, my A1C was 18.3. My blood work 3 weeks ago, my A1C is 5.7. My time in range is 90%. I work in trade, so I do burn through sugars, but still kind of learning how to deal with that. But yeah. In Canada, our healthcare system, even though it's free, is absolutely shattered. So yeah, I kind of navigate through it myself. I have 11 autoimmune diseases. And insulin and Synthroid is all I take.
Jeez, Cal, I can't tell you. I don't know what's been wrong with me this week, but you made me cry right away. I just think it's the idea of being so poorly helped at the beginning and then just sort of released. and then watching you.
But honestly, I think in a way it was kind of a blessing in disguise, because I feel that if I would have been pampered by an endo clinic, I would have learned a lot of wrong things, and then it would just cause me problems. Every person I know who follows everything the endo tells them, their A1C is all over the place. Time and range is never there. They don't understand carb to ratio. Like, it's such little education, it's almost scary.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of glad I was fed to the wolves, because it kind of taught me how to manage without all the bullshit from the clinics. Because let's be honest, a 6-week seminar doesn't teach you nothing. And not every diabetic is the same. So they'll compare me to someone, you know, who's not even like me, and then get mad that our results aren't the same. My pump, I'm on a T-Slim. I've literally done every adjustment myself. I haven't seen a net. I put in a call into my endo last September because I was getting lows at work, like 2.6, 2.7 lows. And I'm still waiting for a call back. So, yeah.
Maybe if she dies, we won't have to call her back. Well, I think
it's... So I figured it out on my own, but it's kind of sad at the fact that I never told them I figured it out on my own. Yeah. And I'm still waiting for a call back.
And they never got back to you.
Nope. They told me it might be November, but possibly January of 2024. So...
Hi, I'm calling because I'm having dangerous lows. Here are the numbers. We might get back to you by November.
Oh, no, I called last September. September 2022 is when I called with these lows.
Oh.
And they told me they might get back to me this November.
So if I call on September, it's a little over a year for them to get back to me.
Yeah. And okay. The reason their excuse for it is because when they look at my blood work, my A1C was okay. So they felt I was just... I guess looking for attention. I don't know. But they never took the time to look at my graph.
I wonder how hard it would be to just put one person who understood graph reading and how to talk to somebody remotely about diabetes.
Well, I had to pay a nurse. So in Canada, we have private healthcare and we have like your public funded healthcare, which takes up 43% of my taxes. Yeah, that free healthcare that all the Americans seem to think is so great up here is what I'm waiting for a phone call back from. The healthcare, I paid $150 for my appointment. The lady called me back in 4 hours.
Yeah, she wanted the $150. This episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes. MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox. And now we're going to hear from Medtronic champion, Jalen.
I was going straight into high school. So it was a summer heading into high school.
Was that particularly difficult?
Unimaginable. You know, I missed my entire summer. So I was going to a brand new school. I was around a bunch of new people that I had not been going to school with. So it was hard trying to balance that while also explaining to people what type 1 diabetes was. My hometown did not have an endocrinologist. So I was traveling over an hour to the nearest endocrinologist for children. So, you know, outside of that, I didn't have any type of support in my hometown.
Did you try to explain to people, or did you find it easier just to stay private?
I just held back. I didn't really like talking about it. It felt like it was just a repeating record where I was saying things and people weren't understanding it. And I also was still in the process of learning it. So I just kept it to myself, didn't really talk about it.
Did you eventually find people in real life that you could confide in?
I never really got the experience until after getting to college. And then once I graduated college, it's all I see, you know. You can easily search Medtronic champions. You see people that pop up and you're like, wow, look at all this content. And I think that's something that motivates me. I started embracing more, you know, how I live with type 1 diabetes.
To hear Jalen's entire conversation, stay till the very end. MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox to hear more stories from the Medtronic champion community. That's
I love $150.
Yeah, that's easy to understand, Carol, by the way.
And the best part was, is the lady I talked to in Ontario, she knew who you were. So it made life very easy. I didn't get yelled at for once for adjusting things and not waiting for healthcare. Because that's what I get yelled at for a lot is, well, why didn't you wait? Well, prime example, I've been waiting a year. If I would have waited, I'd be dead.
Why am I so...
Or I'd be unemployed. You know what I mean? Like, and then I'd still be dead because I'd have no healthcare and I'd have no money. So,
Carol, first of all, I don't know why I'm so emotional today. You're like, she knew who you were. And I was like, I'm helping people.
Oh, you have like, honest to God, like I am your preacher up here. Let me, everyone who I know who is diabetic, because they are not, I'm not the only one with these problems.
Yeah.
They all ask me like, how are you navigating the system? And I told them I gave up on the system. Mm-hmm. And I finally just, I started listening to other people who seemed more educated.
Wow.
And I can probably tell you at least 500 people who have added themselves to your podcast, I've probably sent them there.
I appreciate it. Well, thank you very much. It does continue to grow at a pretty incredible rate.
So. When I joined you in 2020, you had under 10,000 people.
On the Facebook group?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 40,000 now.
It's insane. Yeah. It's awesome, but it's insane.
You know, it's funny is there's an automatic, I used to do it myself, like every 300 people, I would put up a post and be like, hey, welcome everybody. Here's these episodes, like that kind of thing.
You'd be doing that daily now.
Well, it's now I automated it at 150 people and it's happening like every 4 days.
And, that's crazy.
Yeah. And I get this, you know, not every time, but every once in a while, someone will say, I don't understand, like, how often does this post go up? And they attach the fact that there's so many people coming into the group as like, oh, look at all these people who are getting diabetes. And I'm like, well, that's not a consideration. But I think the bigger consideration is look at all these people who were not getting reasonable help. And yeah. Because you don't end up in a Facebook group or listening to a podcast.
No, unless you don't end up online pleading for help through Facebook groups, because you're always told your whole life, do not believe strangers and don't believe everything you read online.
Yes.
But yet for some reason, what I read online is what helps me. If it wasn't for the people in your group and what I read through your, like I listen to you on Spotify. Mm-hmm. So between Spotify and the Facebook group, if I didn't listen to strangers and believe what I read online, I would not be where I'm at today.
Yeah. And those people still only make up the portion of people who were desirous and knowledgeable enough to want more, to do better.
Yes.
And had the nerve to reach through the system that tells you don't go online and talk to people, and then actually have the nerve to reach out. So when I look at that number, 150 people every 4 days going into that Facebook group, I think, what a small number, because of how many other people are out there who are struggling and will never go look for the help.
To me, I look at it opposite. I'm like, what a shame that only 150 people who are struggling, because I know just from my own experience, 98% of diabetics are struggling.
Yeah. No, I believe that. I really do.
Well, I just wish more people could get on the train. Kind of think about a lot of people when you, like a lot of people I talk to, when you've been diabetic for 20 years, and even though you're doing the same thing over and over again and it's wrong, they still feel safe because it came from a medical professional.
Yeah. No, I know. I know. And I can't, listen, I can't argue with them. I've said this a million times in the podcast. I wasn't, prior to my daughter's diagnosis, a person who would have listened to somebody else. I would have made every one of those
jokes. Same way. No.
Yeah, I would have been like, you're listening to someone on the internet? You're going to die. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so, you know, or turmeric does what? Yeah, I don't know. Like, at this point now, I've had people on who, a glucose goddess came on, and she just talked about eating in a certain order, like putting your foods in a certain order.
I do that.
Yeah, I heard back from so many people about like they're using less insulin or they're having like better outcomes. I'm like, oh my God, like why don't we just listen to everybody and then figure it out for yourself?
Like I put myself on metformin, for example, through my GP.
Really?
Yeah. And honestly, it was the best decision I ever made. Because as a LADA, I was chasing highs and chasing lows. And according to my doctor, they just wanted, you know, back then they were like, just turn up. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this doesn't make sense because I'm on biomeds. So I learned that the biomeds, they're steroid based, like all biomeds are. They cause a resistance in your body.
Yeah.
And the resistance was causing weight gain. Like I gained almost 30 pounds and my doctors were like, ah, it's okay. We'll put you on Ozempic. Well, I tried that train and that didn't last long because Ozempic, I know why it's not meant for type ones. You will shit yourself and puke out of every orifice of your body and food will be not appetizing and you'll almost go in DKA. Huh. And I'm very well versed and it was a challenge, but I added the metformin, the extra long release.
Yeah.
500 milligrams a day, about beginning of May, I put myself on it and I've lost 27 pounds.
Look at you.
My insulin needs have cut down by 60%. My carb ratio is now back 1:15. Uh-huh. It was at 1:8. And yeah.
It's so interesting how different things work for different people. Like you just,
that's why I get mad at doctors. Like, why do you keep telling me, well, Susie did this, so we're going to do this for you, but I'm not Susie.
Right.
I'm more like a Sam. Like, I work in trades. You know what I mean? Like, and a lot of doctors don't, when I say I work in trades, they think I'm a flagger. Like, I'm a carpenter, I'm a roofer, I do general contracting. I'm building a building right now that's 40 by 60 with a 20-foot ceiling. And I've done every part of it from the concrete to right now I'm doing finishing work. Mm-hmm. So I'm not like Susie.
Oh, that's interesting. So, Carol, when you tell somebody you work in trades, you think they think you're the person that stands at the side of the road and like waits.
100%. Okay. 100%. I've been in trades 25 years. And I mean, way before autoimmune diseases, I had a single one of them. And it's pretty much the same thing. Like, yeah. When I tell people I work in trades, they usually assume I'm a laborer, I'm a helper, or I'm a flagger. Mm-hmm. It's very rare. Or even like if I voice my opinion, I'm red sealed. So, I mean, I've got 3 licenses. Even at work, I work with all men. And unless the men know me and I pipe up, they usually kind of look at me like, why is she talking?
Jeez. That sounds like a lot of fun. But I want to get back to my thought about like Ozempic didn't work for you, but I've seen it work for other people with type 1. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the Eversense CGM. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. The Eversense CGM is the only long-term CGM with 6 months of real-time glucose readings, giving you more convenience, confidence, and flexibility. And you didn't hear me wrong. I didn't say 14 days. I said 6 months. So if you're tired of changing your CGM sensor every week, you're tired of it falling off or the adhesive not lasting as long as it should, or the sensor failing before the time is up. If you're tired of all that, you really owe it to yourself to try the Eversense CGM. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. I'm here to tell you that if the hassle of changing your sensors multiple times a month is just more than you want to deal with, if you're tired of things falling off and not sticking or sticking too much or having to carry around a whole bunch of extra supplies in case something does fall off, then taking a few minutes to check out EversenseCGM.com/juicebox might be the right thing for you. When you use my link, you're supporting the production of the podcast and helping to keep it free and plentiful. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox.
I think it would have worked for me if I'm not so active.
Okay. Because you really needed to eat.
I didn't really have an issue. It was more when I was working.
Okay. Yeah. Because I'm taking Wegovy, which is Ozempic. It's just named something different. And I mean, a couple of things you said, there, you can't argue with it. Like losing your flavor for food, your taste for food.
Oh, I lost my taste for food. I was living on like 6 units of insulin a day because I couldn't even eat.
Yeah.
But I needed to eat. You know what I mean? Like, so I know for a lot of diabetics, Ozempic works great. But again, we're not all the same. And I think if I was more of a, not so much a homebody, but not so active in work, Ozempic might have worked better for me.
Yeah.
But I found that it was very hard to control my burn at work. Mm-hmm. Well, the first 2 days I took it, it's stronger than the tail kind of thing. So I had like 16 profiles in my pump and, you know, sometimes you forget to change a profile, right?
Oh, Carol, I've been trying to say this to my wife and she doesn't agree with me, but I think that too. It's a once weekly injectable. And I always say to my wife, I lose weight in the first 4 days of the week.
Yep.
But I level,
last 3 days.
Yeah. And then you inject it again.
I just noticed it with symptoms. Like I found my first 3 to 4 days, I was horrible. Mm-hmm. So what I would do is I would take it on a Friday. That way there I could get through that first couple of days over the weekend and then go to work on the weekend. But my issue is like I said, where I take biomeds, I can't inject them too close together.
Mm-hmm. And your bios are for what? Tell me again.
I have ankylosing spondylitis, rheumatoid arthritis. I have fibromyalgia. That's what the biomeds are for, is for those ones. But the biomeds are giving me a condition called NLD. It's a skin condition. Mm-hmm. So I took my last biomed injection 3 weeks ago to see if I can, because I never had the issues before the biomed. So I'm kind of, again, no doctors. So my GP, he trusts my opinion a lot and he's awesome. I can get into him quickly. He kind of goes with my craziness. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. But so far, the best drug I've added is the metformin, honestly.
Yeah, it's helping you the most.
Oh, 100%. Like I said, since May, I've lost 27 pounds and my insulin needs are like back to when I was first diagnosed and better.
Are you scared about stopping the bios about any of your, like what condition that you're taking them for do you most don't want to see come back?
The ankylosing spondylitis, just because of the fusion it causes in my spine and all my ball and socket joints. So I guess my biggest problem is, again, is lack of healthcare. So before COVID, I was very sick. but no one would listen to me because I didn't look diabetic and they kept telling me it was pain conditions and stuff. But deep down, my thyroid was 37. My minerals were all out of whack. I was a type 1, but no one paid attention. Yeah. And I just kept getting sicker and sicker. And the body pain, my rheumatologist said, well, it's time to put you on biomeds. And I wholeheartedly believe that now that I have my thyroid at 2.7, which I'm very proud of, my blood sugar is, you know, 100% in control, that I'm willing to take the chance to pull the biomed out to see if the instability and everything else, because if you do look it up, like, you know, thyroid being out of whack does cause, you know, body aches and issues, and your sugars being out of whack, same thing, you know, your iron, I'm anemic, I'm autoimmune anemic, but now I'm not because I had an injection called Balsamir. Kind of looks like maple syrup. That's what I call it. It's my Canadian juice. But I get it once a year and it brings my blood iron up. So I feel that now that everything's balanced, I'd kind of like to pull the biomed out just because of, you know, the research you do on. No one really knows the long-term effects on it. So once I started getting the weight gain and the skin conditions, I kind of started weighing myself, you know, the options, like, you know, what's the better, I guess, of it. And the skin conditions are horrible.
Yeah. I think you're pointing out something that's interesting because you have so many different autoimmune issues and a lot of these medications are newer. The way I would look at it if I was you is I'm trying to make it alive as long as I can, right? And be mobile, right? And so if I've got to do one thing here for 3 years and then do another thing over here for five, whatever I need to do to keep leaping forward on the calendar is what I would do. Is that how you think of it?
I do, but I also look at the long-term effect of what I'm doing at the same time.
Okay.
So the biomeds, like I said, like there's a lot of issues with leukemia and stuff. When you look up the long-term effects, it does increase your cancer rates and stuff. And there is other unknown issues that they can't really prove, but they can't disprove because, again, I mean, they don't really have enough information in the drug. And I'm not one of being a guinea pig. So once the skin conditions started coming up, that no one could figure out, no dermatologist, no one. Then that's when I was like, okay, this got to go. And as soon as I stopped the biomeds, skin condition cleared up.
Well, that makes sense.
So, yeah. I'm no doctor, but to me, I don't feel it was a bad decision yet. Like I said, I work hard and I don't have any pain yet. They told me within a week I'd regret it. And I'm on week 5 and the only body pain I have is working. You know what I mean? Like I work hard, you know what I mean? So I expect the problem I found on the biomeds is I wasn't hurting. And that kind of scared me also because what is this hiding? Because to me, the way I work, I should feel some sort of, you know, muscle soreness. You know what I mean? Like to me, that's just, it's normal.
You felt working a little hard. Like Superman. And
when I was not, when I was not feeling anything, I was like, okay, this doesn't seem really natural either at the same time. Like, so I went cold turkey, no biomeds, no tramadol, no opiates, no nothing, just pure CBD.
And you did use opiates like pretty...
I've been a medical marijuana patient for 12 years, so...
What's the relief you get from the medical marijuana?
Well, it depends on how you use it. Like, I kind of verse myself pretty good in it, so I kind of have a mixture between CBD and THC. So when I'm at work, example right now, I smoke pure CBD. And the CBD and the CBG helps with pain and inflammation. I swear by it. Like I said, I've been doing it 12 years. And then the THC, I have PTSD and bipolar depression. So I find that the THC kind of helps level me out mentally because I don't take any, you know, Ritalin or lithium or anything for that either. So yeah, I'm pretty functioning for, you know, someone who's technically really broken, I guess.
Yeah. So, okay, hold on a second. How do you smoke CBD? Is that like part of the flower? What do you do to get it?
Well, I order online. Like I have in Canada, weed's legal. So my medical plan, thankfully, covers my marijuana. So my prescription's for 5 grams a day. So I can order online through cannabis dispensaries. And I have creams, I have salves, I have oil I eat, I have pills I take, I have weed I smoke, I have vapes I smoke. I've even got freaking face wash, body washes, like... If there's a product out there, you can pretty much get it with CBD in it now. Mm-hmm. And CBD is the byproduct that you can't get high. Like I could literally drink every bottle of oil I have in my house and I won't get stoned. I'll get sick, but I won't get stoned.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know the differences between them. That's why people think weed is so taboo. Yeah. You just get high like you're in high school and that's it. But yeah, if you know the difference, there's a huge difference.
Right. So when you say smoke CBD, is it with a vape or is it with fire or how do you do that?
Well, I have my vape cartridges, which is like kind of like a rosin oil that goes into like a battery and it burns off that way. And then I have just flour that I can bust up and roll like a joint.
Okay. Okay. I got it. Oh, I'm going backwards here for a second, but do you have autoimmune hemolytic anemia?
Yes. The one where I could bleed really easy.
Yeah. How did they diagnose that?
Well, it was a pain doctor actually who diagnosed it again, right at like before COVID started. And I was kind of like, my body was melting down. I went to go see a pain clinic and he asked me what kind of blood work and stuff I've had. And I kind of explained to him, you know, not too much, but you know, they told me I had this, this, and this. And he asked me if I'd be willing to do a couple tests and stuff with them. And I was like, okay. And he did some blood work and some mobility tests and stuff. And there was certain factors in my blood, if you have the right doctor, that they can see it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow.
Because like my inflammation markers, I'm trying to think of the name for it, but there's like an acronym for it that they watch those very often. When I was first diagnosed with AS, my markers were 900 and now my markers are 7.
Jeez. Wow. I'm super impressed. GSR,
that's the name of it. It's your GSR reading. And that will tell you in your blood, the inflammation in your body.
GSR?
GSR, yeah.
Inflammation. Okay. Okay, wow. And you've figured all this out just because you had to. So finding me was not a big surprise because you found something for every one of your issues.
I did, but you were my problem solver for diabetes because I hadn't had any, you know what I mean, any real good information for diabetes yet. Like I said, when I was diagnosed, it was, you're an adult, you can figure it out, here's your insulin, have a great day. And it was very heartbreaking, honestly, because I had no clue what to do. And I'm terrified of needles. So for the first 6 months until I bought my own pump, I had to get my spouse to give me insulin. So how I would warm him up to it, because he's military. So he was coming at me like he was saving my life in war with an epinephrine pen. Like I almost had a stroke. So how I kind of got him to do it and not be so like, I'm saving your life kind of thing, like, is I would take my insulin in my butt cheek. So as a man, you can understand this, that when your wife comes up and goes, time for my insulin, and sticks a butt cheek in your face, you're going to be like, okay, and you're going to be a lot nicer. So that's how we kind of got through that learning curve.
Carol, you sexied up your insulin time.
I'm going to make it fun, right?
I do know what but you mean.
I'm terrified of needles. Like I am absolutely petrified. Like I need an Ativan just to get blood work. Even for my biomeds, I take an Ativan before I would even take my biomeds because I was that scared of needles. So the pump for me was a no-brainer.
You know, that really is scary because I've now used these Wegovy pens countless times and there's nothing to it and they don't hurt. So you really are.
No, it's not even the hurt. It's just the fact I find it so unnatural
right.
to stick myself with something. And a lot of it too is where I grew up. Like I grew up in the ghetto and like, you know, the low income area of my province kind of thing. So growing up, we had a lot of crackheads, a lot of drug addicts and stuff. And to me, needles were addiction things. So I was always, unless my doctor was doing the blood work, I could never do anything myself. Because to me, in my head, it was, this is horrible. You shouldn't be injecting yourself.
Yeah.
And it was just a fear I always had. So it kind of, yeah, I was 40 when I got diagnosed. So it was stuck with me for 40 years.
Yeah. How old are you now? Like 44. Okay. Are you still taking steroid injections?
Nope, nothing.
So you stopped the biomeds and the steroids?
Yep, everything.
Okay. Arden just got a cortisone shot in her shoulder yesterday.
Ooh, so, those are bad. They spiked my blood sugar for 3 days.
Yeah, so like it was, she's had, hold on a second. There's an Apache helicopter going by. Let's wait a second. What is happening? If this is it, Carol, I assume this is the Canadians.
We're on the phone together, hey, Scott.
I think this is the Canadians coming for us right now, actually. They finally had enough. You tried to burn us out earlier in the year, and when that didn't work with the smoke, I guess now they're going to send helicopters. Yeah.
Well, we only got two, so you know what I mean? Like, if you see one, there's only one more. Like, our Canadian military is very promising, let me tell you.
If you see one, there's only one more.
And if you see it sinking in the air, it's coming down. Yeah. Like, that's...
So, I guess Arden had... Like the guy diagnosed her with like an, I don't know, impingement. Like, I guess her, like up the top of her shoulders, kind of pinching on a, I don't know, Obviously, I was in the appointment, didn't pay that close of attention. But you know, there's a ligament in there. And once it hits it a couple of times, it gets a little swollen. Then you get caught in a loop and you kind of can't get out of that loop anymore. Mm-hmm. So Arden's like, you know, for years, she's like, my shoulder always hurts. And the other day, Kelly's like, look at her back. And it was swollen. Like the muscle down the side of her spine was swollen. I was like, what in the hell? She goes, my shoulder really hurts. And I'm like, well, your back is swollen. And so we kind of like,
how my AS started, just to warn you.
Your what?
My ankylosing spondylitis.
Okay. Go ahead. Tell me
how it started, was with the swollen muscles down the sides of my back, my shoulders, my ribs, my knees, anything that was a socket joint, just one after another became unmanageable, to the point where my hips hurt so bad that they were talking about a hip replacement. Mm. And it came down to having AS, and it's an HLA-B1, I believe you check for your antibody.
Okay.
Well, you know, usually if you have one autoimmune disease, you've got
You could others. Have more, for sure.
And if I remember right, doesn't your daughter have thyroid and some arthritis or something?
You know, it's funny. I don't know about, like, I couldn't tell you if she has arthritis or not. I tell you that it seems to move with her hormone shifts. Like her wrist will be sore for a couple of days, or her knee, or something like that. But it's this shoulder thing was specific. It started, we felt like it started when she was playing softball, and she stopped playing softball because she couldn't throw a ball anymore. And then, you know, they asked her to do PT, and she did PT, and it, like, I don't know, it didn't really do anything. And so then for years, she just kind of like deals with it. Like every once a month when her hormones go the wrong way, she's like, I just need somebody to rub my shoulder, blah, blah, blah. But mostly it's manageable, but she says it hurts most of the time. So
you should look up CBD and CBG. You won't get your daughter high. I know people who give it to their five-year-olds for epilepsy and stuff, but I played sports. I was rugby and lacrosse, and I played it right up until I was 25. And I found that CBD was always way better than any pain med I ever took. Okay. It was easier on the stomach. I didn't have to take it long term. It was one of those, I took it as I needed it. Mm-hmm. And again, you don't get high. There's no side effects, no pharmaceutical worry issues.
Do they come in strength? Can get it.
Pardon?
Are they like different strengths? Like,
oh yeah, you can get it as like, you can microdose with it, or else you work your way up with it.
Okay. That's interesting.
And yeah, like I said, I use it for my rheumatoid arthritis and everything. Like,
and that's just like under your tongue oil?
Well, you can take under your tongue oil, or else you can get in a capsule.
Oh, no kidding.
You can actually make the capsules yourself. If you buy the oil and then you buy the empty capsules, you can fill your cap. That's what I did for a while, was I pre-filled my capsules. So I had them at work and stuff.
No kidding.
But you can get the empty capsules usually through your pharmacy.
Oh, that's super interesting. Oh yeah, I'll definitely look. And I'll ask about the test too, but for the moment, like, you know, the guy did the x-ray. He goes, like, structurally, I don't see a problem in here. And he's like, so you have two options. We can do PT, or we can do like this cortisone shot, and then you can do some PT and strengthen everything around it. And Arden was like looking at me, like, because we talked about it for 2 days. She's like, I'm not getting a shot in my shoulder. She said it for 2 days. And then, you know, like, we get in there and I'm like, Arden, listen, if it was me, I'd take the cortisone shot just to see if this helps. If it helps, and then, you know, really this is not an autoimmune thing and it's just your shoulder, then, like, why not take the help from the cortisone? We'll deal with the blood sugars. And then, you know, you can kind of like see where this goes. It's at least it's an easy thing to try. And she did. And it was amazing, because prior to the injection, the doctor's like, lift your arms, like, you know, they do all that stuff. And a couple of places, like, Arden couldn't even lift her arm up over her head. Like, just,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. Like she could get it up and it would stop, or she could put them out to her sides, but she couldn't raise it past her shoulder, like that. And he pops this cortisone in. Like, I'm not lying. I've never been so amazed by anything in my entire life. And he goes,
oh, it works in minutes.
Holy God. He's like, okay, stand up. Yeah. Do this, do this, do this. And she lifts her arm and it shoots up over her head. And she actually, like, the look of surprise on her face was insane.
What just happened?
She's like, how the hell did my arm go up in the air like that? And I was like, wow. And she goes, holy crap, that's crazy. So anyway, she's, you know, We're going to see how she is today.
I did the cortisone and then I started getting into where I had to have it all the time.
I would imagine it's, you know.
And that's why I kind of was like, okay, there has to be another solution for this.
Diminishing returns. Yeah. So she just said like, it's weak. It's the pain causes weakness. So she has the pain and then the weakness kind of comes from it like that. But she said until he looked at her yesterday, she didn't recognize that her right arm was weaker than her left arm.
That's crazy. It's probably just she just grew with it over time, never really.
Yeah. So I'm interested to see what happens. But at the same time, the next time she gets a blood test, I'll ask to look for this too, you know.
Well, I would tell them to check like for HLA markers in general, because usually if you have type 1 and thyroid, from what I've learned, and you're having odd pains, that usually means that you have an umbrella, you know, something in there. Mm-hmm. And rheumatoid arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis, and fibromyalgia. Sister in a lot with diabetes in general.
Yeah. Okay. Oh no, we'll definitely do that. I just wrote it down. So that must mean I have to do it now. I mean, what the hell? You know what I mean? I mean, we're in the same situation. You are like Arden's endocrinologist. She's with an adult endo now, but we're not in Canada, but I did the same thing. Like Arden goes to a doctor who's a cash pay doctor who doesn't take our insurance. And then, I mean, we can then submit it to our insurance and we recoup actually almost all of our money back. It's not, the cost isn't any different. Yeah, we're just lucky with our insurance. But if I said that to this doctor, she'd be like, yeah, let's do it. I'm like, okay. So, you know, that's.
Because my doctor, I'm lucky because I do the same thing to him. I'm like, you know, what's it going to hurt? You know what I mean? Like if the test comes back negative, well, then we were wrong kind of thing. But 8 out of 10 times so far in the past couple of years, I'm not always right, but then I get their brains thinking like, oh well, let's try this now kind of thing.
Like, I find that too, like you can kind of get the doctors to think about it.
Well, once they get past the fact that they can realize you're not there just for the drugs, because sadly a lot of people are.
Yeah.
And body pain is one of those, if you can play the card right, you're going to get what you want, because it's very hard to prove it right without checking your GSRs and stuff, and that takes time. So a lot of doctors will, you know, give out tramadol, we'll say, which I started on tramadol, and it's your gateway. Let's put it that way. Because when I first started with pain, tramadol was what they gave me. And then the tramadol didn't work that much. So then they put me up. And the next thing you know, now I'm on Dilaudins. And then I was on fentanyl. And then I was on oxys there for a while. And then when it started getting to the point where I felt like I was in the movie and I was one of those addicts, I went to my doctor and I was like, okay, like, you know, this isn't working kind of thing. Like I can't work. I can't function. They're like, yeah, but you have no pain. And I'm like, sure, but I can't work and I can't function. Right. Like this to me isn't natural. And all they ever wanted to do was push more drugs, more drugs, more drugs. Mm-hmm. I've been called non-compliant so much that I think it's my middle name. And I guarantee you it's written right across the top of my file in big bold letters.
And that's for not wanting to take pain pills?
That's for not wanting to take painkillers.
Hmm. Okay.
Because, and same as with my biomeds. When I told him I stopped taking them, he told me he won't have me as a doctor anymore because I'm going against his medical advice. Mm-hmm. But his solution for my skin problem that I know was caused by this biomed was, well, this particular drug is good for psoriasis and maybe you have psoriasis. So let's double the drug and see what happens. That's the most uneducated thing I ever heard in my life.
Oh, he wanted to give you more of the biomed.
He wanted to give me more. Because he's like, well, you know, maybe you have psoriasis. And I'm like, no, like this isn't psoriasis. We already went through that. Like I had a biopsy done through a dermatologist and everything came back non-conclusive. Nobody could figure out what it was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I'm not open for doubling my drug. And he's like, well, you're going against my wishes. And I was like, well, I told you I would like to take a break. And that's when he said, if you're not going to listen to me, then I can't be your doctor anymore. So well, technically, I don't even have a rheumatologist because I took myself off the drug.
What would it hurt him to let you just jump off it for a little bit and see what happens?
Well, his issue with me is I've already proved him wrong. So I think I kind of hurt his ego. Okay. So when I first started with the biomeds, I started this particular biomed after I got diagnosed with type 1. Not long after, because he wanted to put me on it at the same time. And I was like, no, I have too many other fires burning. I'd rather put out some fires before I add another drug. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like,
I didn't want that much in my system kind of thing. Yeah. So when I started the drug, it was questionable anyways, because like I said, I had so many other issues that I still to this day believe that all those other issues were making my pain worse, because I'm very active. So I know that I don't have AS issues from fusion. I have zero fusion in my body. My inflammation markers are back at 7. So, you know, something changed somewhere. So I felt coming off the biomed, the worst that's going to happen is when I do my blood work in 2 weeks, my GSR might be a little higher. But then to me, that would be the proof I would need to say, okay, Carol, maybe you need to go back on this.
Yeah.
But all I wanted to do was to go off, have a break, see if the skin cleared up and check my inflammation marker. And he wasn't willing to do that. So that started proving to me that at $6,791 an injection every 3 weeks, and I have to pay 10%, that I feel I'm a cash cow.
Oh, he's making a little money off the whole thing.
Someone's making money.
Yeah, somebody is.
I know it ain't me. You know what I mean? Like, and when your solution for my problem that only started when I started this pharma drug is to give me more, that tells me someone's paying you. You're not caring about my health, because or else you would be like, okay, Carol, I see what you're saying. Let's try something new.
Yeah. Interesting.
But instead, he wanted to give me more. I'm kind of glad that we don't really, you know, we're not a doctor patient anymore. But the other issue you have in New Brunswick, for example, is we only have 2.5 endos in this whole province. And I say half because one doctor is an internal medicine doctor. She claims to be an endo, but she's not an endo. I know, I've had her. And she doesn't like me. She doesn't believe in pre-bolusing. She doesn't. Yeah, she said pre-bolusing is taboo. Oh. And I just kind of looked at her like, huh? Like, and I kind of looked at her. I said, okay, so you mean to tell me that when I put insulin in my body, you think it works right away? And she goes, yeah. I said, but it doesn't. I said, it goes through your skin. Like, it has to absorb. You know what I mean, you got to give it time to work. And right. She goes, that's ridiculous. And I'm like, no, it's not. So to me, that told me that you're an internal medicine doctor. You're practicing medicine. You're not mastering medicine. You're still practicing because you don't know it. You know what I mean? Like, and just her other solutions for diabetes was just, I wasn't comfortable with it. It was always, you know, we'll try this and I'll see you in 6 months.
Yeah.
But then I never got a call. And then because of COVID, it was, oh, well, we looked at your blood work and due to COVID, we can't see you right now. And I'm not vaccinated. So that's a big one up here. Like, I'm like the antichrist up here. Okay. So where I was on biomeds, I have so many autoimmune diseases. I was told you have to get vaccinated. You need like 17 doses or you're going to die. And I was like, okay. But my biomeds I was on, when you look at the pamphlet, this is why I have no trust in pharmaceuticals or medical. So when you look at the pamphlet on the biomeds, it says right on it, you can't take flu meds. I can't take antibiotics. I can't take vaccines. I can't take anything. But they wanted me to get vaccinated. And I was like, no. So I held out. Well, I never caught COVID. I never got sick. I worked the whole pandemic in trades.
Yeah.
And I proved them wrong. So they don't like me. So my rheumatologist, when it came to with him, I told him with the biomeds. I was like, so the biomeds are causing an issue with my diabetes. And he's like, you're ridiculous. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I was like, before I started the biomeds, I only needed X amount of insulin. So now, since the biomeds, I need 30% more. So either I'm sick or something's causing a resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no. So Carol being Carol does the research. And I luck in. I'm very fortunate. My brother-in-law is a research doctor at one of the hospitals in the city.
Okay.
So I talked to him a lot and he agreed with me that, no, your doctor's wrong in those biomeds. You know, there is cortisone and there is steroids and stuff in them, kind of thing. And it will cause you resistance. So I went back into the doctor with the information from my brother-in-law and he straight up told me I was wrong again. And I'm like, well, because to me, I'm looking at the proof, right? Like,
I don't understand that you couldn't go to a doctor and say, hey, look, in the package insert for this medication I take, it says for me not to take a vaccine. So
yeah, but Dr. Trudeau, so I had an exemption. They gave me an exemption.
Yeah.
So I wasn't, you know, forced to be vaccinated. And then our darling sock boy premier there, prime minister there, decided that on September 28th of 2021, he was canceling all medical exemptions. So pretty much in Canada, you get vaccinated. And if the vaccine doesn't kill you, then you get a second dose. That's how it works up here.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
I don't understand
how they can... I wasn't able. I wasn't able to work at because up till September 20th, I had this exemption. So I was allowed on a lot of job sites and stuff because we do a lot of government work. So in order to be on a government site, today,
now I said
you have to be vaccinated, right? So I had this exemption. And then September 28th came and my exemption was null and void. So I had to tell my boss, I can't come into work. And we were joking about it. I was like, but I can call a buddy up on the reserve there and I can get a fake vaccine passport if you want. And I can just carry it in my wallet. Because up here, it's just a piece of paper, right? Like, freaking 12-year-old can make you one. And we laughed and joked about it and stuff. And he said, no, he goes, you hold your ground. And, well, you're still going to be vaccinated and Carol's still working. So far, I'm winning.
Wow.
Because up here, we have such a shortage in labor.
What are they going to do?
Fire me? You know what I mean? Like, you need me. Like,
did the ban on the exemptions get lifted or does that still exist?
It still exists.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Interesting. They've backed off a bit on the force of it to a point, but not really. And it's not that I'm an anti-vaxxer. Like, everybody's like, oh, you know, you just don't believe in science. Oh, I believe in science. Like, I'm all about science.
Also holding a package insert that's telling me not to do this. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because beforehand, I couldn't get a flu shot. I couldn't, you know, and so. How?
Right.
Like, it came down to another one of those money. You know what I mean? Like, if you cared about my health, you'd follow my exemption and you'd follow my doctor's orders. But it got so bad up here that even my doctor told me, he goes, I know you're right, but if I tell you you're right, I'll lose my job.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a weird system, I guess, the way it runs.
And up here, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you've even, I don't know if you pay attention to how Canada's going right now, but we can't even see our own news.
You can't
because
see.
Trudeau decided he made this bill C-18. So now he expects Facebook and Google and everybody to pay the government for us to share our local news. So if I want to go on Facebook and share an article, I'm not allowed.
Really?
Because our Canadian government expects Facebook to pay the government for the ability to share Canadian news. And now Trudeau is getting mad at Facebook. Because they're not following suit.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you're making, you know, billions of dollars off of, you know, Canadian content. No, they're not.
Well, I don't know anything
and
about
even if they are, that's their business. It's not up to, like, it's so broken up here.
Yeah, Carol, I don't know about your politics, but I can tell you what, being prime minister has made him look really old pretty quickly.
Yes, that's because of his 5 vaccines probably and all the stress he's going through.
He was so handsome when he started.
Yeah, and then he opened his mouth and he got really ugly.
That's crazy. Okay, so we have... I'm looking through your whole thing. And we still, like... So this is just kind of a check back in from you since your other episode. So, like, first of all, I was really thrilled to hear how well you're managing your thyroid stuff because when you tell that story about having it a TSH in the 30s... I can't even wrap my head around how terrible you must have felt like with that.
I felt like death. Like, yeah. I don't even like know how else to describe it besides I went into my doctor and I pretty much threw my medical insurance, my health card, and my wallet on the counter. And I said, whatever it takes, fix me. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't keep living like this. And they finally took me seriously. But my thyroid didn't get diagnosed until I went into DKA.
That had to be horrible.
It was kind of one of those when I hit the hospital, they were like, oh, by the way, you know, you have type 1 diabetes and you have, you know, I think it's Hashimoto's where my thyroid stays high.
Hashimoto's.
Yeah, Hashimoto's. Yeah. And I was just like, wow, like this was things I had been, you know, wondering about. But yeah, it was, I don't even know how to describe besides saying that I felt like I was going to die. Hmm. Like my chest just, I always felt like I had like pneumonia and my body like. I was walking like Mr. Burns, if that makes sense. Like, I couldn't straighten out because everything was so sore that it just, yeah, like, and then once my thyroid came down, like, oh my God, the difference. Yeah. Like, it's crazy.
It's such a tiny little thing. And it just.
And I lost so much weight. Like, I was to the point where, like, I was unhealthy looking. My skin was almost gray. Like, it was, oh, like, I never want to go back there.
Yeah. And now you just take a. Synthroid?
Yeah, I take the largest pill you can take, the 2 milligram.
Wow.
And I guess if that ever stops working and my TSH goes back up, I have to get my wings clipped on my thyroid.
Yes.
My grandmother had it done like back in like the 60s kind of thing.
Really?
So they told me that it's, yeah. And I didn't learn about that until after I was diagnosed because I was raised by my grandparents. Mm-hmm. So, but I was very young when they passed. So I don't really remember like a whole lot kind of thing. So when I got sick, thanks to Facebook, I put out a post and one of my aunts came back to me and she's like, yeah, your grandmother had that. And I was like, oh, I remember the scar on her neck, but she smoked 2.5 packs of cigarettes a day. So I, you know what I mean? Like,
thought that might be it.
I just, yeah, like kind of thing. Like I thought maybe she had a tracheotomy or something at one point. Like I wasn't, never really questioned,
a little kid,
but
yeah,
she had thyroid disease.
How about that? So she had her like,
and I don't know my father. So like, I only really have one side of my bloodline I can really explore.
To know about. Yeah. Yeah. So do you think she had like her parathyroids removed?
That's what my aunt said. My aunt said that she pretty much had almost her whole thyroid removed.
No kidding.
Isn't that
something?
And that was the only way, I guess, back then that they pretty much controlled thyroid disease is they would clip your thyroid back.
Mm. Yeah.
Like you would go in and they would clip off a bit and see how it worked. And if that didn't work, they'd take a little bit more and kind of go that way.
That does not seem technical at all, does it, Carol?
Not at all. No, I'm kind of glad that medicine has, evolved. Since then,
yeah, I don't know, the way you were saying that, I was like, oh god, that probably is, they were probably like, just try this piece, let's see what happens.
My uncle, who was diagnosed with cancer in the 50s, he had it in his foot, and all they did was just keep cutting back then. So they cut off his foot and they didn't know what they were doing back then, so obviously there was a little bit left, then it came back, so then they cut him off to the knee. Mm-hmm. And then a year and a bit later they cut him off at the hip, and then he still ended up passing away at 7.5 years old.
Wow.
But that was what they did in the 50s and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I'm very glad that medicine has evolved. I just wish I could access it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you are a great example, obviously, but without these medications, you would be crinkled up in a ball right now.
100%.
Yeah. High on painkillers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something. Jesus. When's your first, I know we probably went over this in the other episode, but when was your first medical condition?
My first medical condition was a condition called bullous pemphigoid. It's actually an autoimmune disease. It's a skin condition, and it causes like big blisters and stuff on your skin. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time they think it's, back in the 80s, they told my grandparents I had herpes, I had scabies, they told them I had HIV, and then eventually they deemed it down to this bullous pemphigoid. But that was my first one, and I was in grade 3.
Wow. So when you were,
and then like after six, that, I was in high school and I got diagnosed with anemia. I was in grade 10. I passed out playing rugby and they thought I just got hit and I had like a concussion. Mm-hmm. And come to find out that my iron was so low that I was pretty much borderline of a blood transfusion.
Okay.
And then that was number 2. And then after that, it just, like, honestly, some of them, I don't even know if I have them. I think sometimes they just pulled a name out of the hat and went, well, we'll go with this one this month and see what happens. Because as I've kind of fixed other stuff, like I've never felt better than I do today. And I barely take any medication. So I'm tempted one day to try and find another doctor when we have more and actually get properly retested instead of by a doctor who's making money off of me. Mm-hmm. But I think of the 11 I have on paper, I think about 3 or 4 of them were misdiagnoses of other things. Because they told me I had diabetes for years. Like after my pain doctor, actually very smart man, looked through my past blood works. And he was like, these blood works were fasting blood works. Did you eat before you went? And I'm like, no, why would I eat? He said, well, your blood sugar was 9.5 at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, no. And then he was like, huh. So then he started looking more and more. And he's like, honestly, Carol, he's like, I think you've been diabetic a while, but I've worked trades my whole life. So
yeah,
he's like, I think your job is what kept you undiagnosed. Because what got me so sick was COVID. When COVID first started, the world shut down. So I wasn't able to work.
You stopped moving.
And I stopped moving.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to go out. I wasn't even allowed in the woods on my four-wheeler. I mean, we were very, like you guys, we were very all locked up for a while.
Yeah.
And tick, 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 tick. You know what I mean? It just kept going. Yeah. And he swears that me stopping working is what brought it out. But he's like, if COVID wouldn't have happened, he's like, you're so active. He said, you probably would have lived like this for another 5+ years.
Might not even notice for a while. Yeah.
He said, looking back, because he could only go back 5 years on my blood work, and all my blood work was the same this whole 5 years. When I was pregnant with my children, my blood work was high, and they just, again, contributed to she's pregnant, she probably ate. Mm-hmm. But he said, I had gestational diabetes with both my last 2 children. It was just missed because I didn't look diabetic. And yeah.
How are your kids?
My kids are great. Yeah. I did the trial net with all three of them. Not one of them has a marker. I have a grandson too. He has no markers. My kids are 25, 18, and almost 7. And all three of them are super healthy. My middle daughter is on Team Canada for cheerleading. My son's in trades himself. And I find that they take better care of themselves after watching what I went through and seeing how taking better care of yourself has helped me being, even though I'm so sick.
Yeah.
Like I make my own everything because I don't trust food anymore. So like I make my own butters, mayos, yogurt, sour creams, anything I can make because I find everything from the store has so much added sugar and it's not on the label.
No, I mean, getting clean food is, I think it's really important. I don't know.
Yeah. 3.5 hours out of the closest major city. And we bought, since I talked to you, we bought a homestead in the middle of nowhere in New Brunswick. I grow all my own food. I have chickens. I have a pig. I've got turkeys, meat birds. Like I'm pretty much Amish right now. And like I said, I've never felt better.
Wow. Good for you. That's wonderful. Really is. You're
my dietitian right now, right? Tells me I'm crazy, but it's okay.
I don't think you're crazy. Are you? You're at work right now, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. I don't know. I think you're terrific. I'm so glad you came back. Are we missing anything as far as an update goes? I feel like we hit the things we were supposed to talk about.
Like since I talked to you, pretty much I had relisted 2 more times because I made a post there when I was really low at work. And the lady that helps you out, her name begins with a Y, amazing lady. She directed me to a couple podcasts I had forgot. And those podcasts are what tweaked it around so that I don't go low at work anymore. And then there was another guy in your group who's in trades like me, who's a type 1. And me and him kind of started hashing out, like, you know, tricks to help each other out kind of thing. And honestly, you know, no thanks to healthcare, but yeah, doing amazing.
Isabel helped you.
That's her name. Yes.
Yeah. She's Canadian, by the way.
The JDRF up here for New Brunswick. We actually fought. I think I made a post there actually on the group there a couple months ago where our provincial government is now covering all type 1 supplies. So yes. CGMs, pumps, it doesn't matter your age anymore. Before it was when you hit 18, you were on your own. And now as long as you're not making, you know, crazy amounts of money, the province actually helps you now.
I'll help you. Wow, good for you. Wow, that's terrific. Yeah,
I have a reserve next to me where I help a lot. Unfortunately, the reserves have a lot of type 2 diabetics up here. And it's sadly because of the way people are forced to eat because of the cost of living up here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I help a lot of type 2s with the stuff in which I've learned from you. And pretty much a lot of them now have learned proper eating and how to use insulin. Because even on type 2s, no one really teaches them anything. They just kind of give them the, you know, the take 10 units a meal and pray pretty much. And
Now I, when Jenny and I made the type 2 pro tip series, I said, Jenny, I'm like, this is going to, like, I think this is so important. You know, I know it's a type 1 podcast and some people aren't going to download it. I was like, but there's so many people who know other people and this is not the kind of thing. It's not the kind of information they go out and look for. So I said, I think just
well, my mom's a type 2.
Yeah.
But honestly, I believe my mom is like me. Like I know my real mom. And she has horrible health. And she's had type 2 diabetes, according to her doctor, since she was in her 20s. And she just turned 60. And no matter how much metformin she takes, how much Ozempic she takes, how much insulin she takes, she keeps gaining weight. Everything keeps getting worse. She's to the point now she's in stage 5 kidney failure.
Oh my gosh.
And it's all because of her diabetes management. She won't listen to me. I've tried helping her, but he's the one that my doctor never told me. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of sad at the fact that I could, if she would listen, it could help, but she's abused herself so long that she's beyond help. They won't approve her for a transplant. They won't approve her for dialysis because they told her where she can't monitor her blood sugar, that they don't trust her with a peri-dialysis machine so she can do it at home. But I believe that my mom is a lad like me. But she won't go to her doctor and get the test.
Oh, I people
just get watching her and stuff like and seeing how she does things and, you know, what she does. If she was type 2, it should work, but it doesn't work. And where I have LADA, I believe it's hereditary from what I've learned. It came from somewhere.
Yeah, I would think, though, that eventually the LADA would just get to type 1. I think it seems uncommon for me. for her to live that many
decades. Well, my doctor told me, he said, LADA, it is type 1. It just, all it is that your body took longer to react.
Yeah, I mean, all the way to like, boom, like you need insulin or you're dead. Like, I don't know if I've ever heard anybody living with LADA that long. Not to say that it couldn't happen, I guess, but I've never heard that before. It just sucks that, how old is she?
60.
Yeah, that's too young to not,
she
like.
She takes 120 units of insulin in total a day.
And she's
on 18.
Yeah, and she's on metformin.
Yep, 1,000 milligrams of metformin.
Is that all in need? Is that an insulin need, or is she eating in a way that's supporting that insulin need as well?
Oh, no, she doesn't. She doesn't dose, right? Because no one's ever taught her. So yeah. She just does what her doctor tells her to do, 10 units every meal, and then she eats whatever she wants.
Oh. Yeah, boy.
Because that's what they told her to do.
Yeah, I think that really is the kind of unspoken plan. Like, just, we'll just keep them going as long as we can.
They're setting people up for disaster.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I think that's what they're doing. Like, I think that in some situations, people just don't understand, and they look at you like, well, you're on the path of, you know, destruction now, so we'll just slow down that travel as best we can, and at the end, you'll crash into the end of it and die from something from this type 2 diabetes.
Pretty much, yeah. But it kind of makes my mother very depressed and hateful at me, too, because I got diagnosed way later than her, and I fixed myself, and she hates me for it, calls me a show-off. Are you sure you're even diabetic? And I'm like, I'm positive. Like, I wear a pump. Like, I know I'm diabetic.
She really doesn't understand. I love her
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, like when I'm at her house or she's at my house, she gets mad at me because she'll want something. I'm like, take your insulin. Mm-hmm. She's like, and I'm like, I'm not giving you anything until you take your insulin. Like, I have to treat her like a child, and it sucks. Yeah. But I can't let her do that in front of me.
Yeah, it's hard.
If that makes any sense. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, we spoke a lot about your family in the other episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, not, you didn't grow up with the Brady Bunch.
No, no. Oh God, no.
Yeah.
My grandfather was a World War II vet and he believed in capital punishment. So yeah.
Jesus.
I am 44 years old and I do not drink. I've never been drunk because of my grandfather. Cause
that's how scared you were.
Then.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how scared you were. In Canada, you didn't drink. That's crazy.
Yeah. Smoke lots of weed, but I never drink. In the back of my head at 44, I still hear my dad. If I catch you, I'm going to kick your ass. And I
had a conversation with a person in their 50s recently, and I asked them if they ever considered smoking weed. And that person said no. And I said, why not? And
probably for the same reason.
They said, I just think it would let my parents would feel let down. A person in their 50s.
Yeah, concerned, that's kind of me with drinking.
Yeah, concerned about their parents in their 70s, probably the end of their life almost. You know, even maybe older is what I'm saying. And
my grandfather isn't even alive. He died when I was 21. And I'm still terrified he's going to come haunt me if I drink.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Like, because
that's fear right there.
Yeah, it works. My gosh. All right, Carol, I could talk to you forever, but I'm going to let you get back to work. I appreciate you spending this hour with me very much. And coming back and filling everybody in. Like I said before,
well, thanks for the checkup.
Oh my God. Carol was on episode 586. It was called Body Fire. And you should check it out. Thank you. Hold on 1 second for me. I want to thank the Eversense CGM for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box Podcast, and invite you to go to eversensecgm.com/juicebox to learn more about this terrific device. You can head over now and just absorb everything that the website has to offer, and that way you'll know if Eversense feels right for you. eversensecgm.com/juicebox. Jalen is an incredible example of what so many experience living with diabetes. You show up for yourself and others every day, never letting diabetes define you. And that is what the Medtronic Champion community is all about. Each of us is strong, and together, we're even stronger. To hear more stories from the Medtronic Champion community, or to share your own story, visit MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox and look out online for the hashtag Medtronic Champion. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy my full conversation with Jalen coming up in just a moment. The Diabetes Variables series from the Juice Box Podcast goes over all the little things that affect your diabetes that you might not think about, from travel and exercise to hydration and even trampolines. Juiceboxpodcast.com. Go up in the menu and click on Diabetes Variables. If you're looking for community around type 1 diabetes, check out the Juice Box Podcast private Facebook group, Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes. But everybody is welcome. Type 1, type 2, gestational, loved ones, it doesn't matter to me. If you're impacted by diabetes and you're looking for support, comfort, or community, check out Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes on Facebook. Thanks for hanging out until the end. Now you're going to hear my entire conversation with Jalen. Don't forget MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox or the hashtag Medtronic Champion on your favorite social media platform.
My name is Jalen Mayfield. I am 29 years old. I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I am originally from Waynesboro, Mississippi. So I've kind of traveled all over. I've just landed here in the Midwest and haven't left since.
Nice. How old were you when you were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes?
I was 14 years old when I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes.
15 years ago. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. 14 years old. What are you like? Do you remember what grade you were in?
I actually do, because we have like an eighth grade promotion. So I had just had eighth grade promotion. So I was going straight into high school. So it was a summer heading into high school.
Was that particularly difficult going into high school with this new thing?
It was unimaginable. You know, I missed my entire summer. So I was going to a brand new school with, you know, our community. We brought three different schools together. So I was around a bunch of new people that I had not been going to school with. So it was hard trying to balance that while also explaining to people what type 1 diabetes was.
Did you even know, or were you just learning at the same time?
I honestly was learning at the same time. My hometown did not have an endocrinologist. So I was traveling almost over an hour to the nearest, you know, pediatrician, like endocrinologist for children. So, you know, outside of that, I didn't have any type of support in my hometown.
Was there any expectation of diabetes? Does somebody else in your family have type 1?
No, I was the first one to have type 1 in my family.
And do you have children now?
I do not.
No. Do you think you will one day?
Still thinking about it, but right now I've just been traveling, focusing on my career and myself. So
what do you do? What's your career?
Yeah, so I am a marketing leasing specialist for a student housing company. So we oversee about 90 properties throughout the U.S. So I've been working for them for about 8 years now.
And you get to travel a lot in that job?
Yes, I experience a lot of travel. It's fun, but also difficult, especially with all your type 1 diabetes supplies and all your electronics. So it's a bit of a hassle sometimes. Mm-hmm.
What do you find that you absolutely need with you while you're traveling, diabetes-wise?
I have learned my biggest thing I need is some type of glucose. I have experienced lows, whether that's on a flight, traveling, walking through the airport. And I used to always experience just being nervous to ask for some type of snack or anything. So I just felt, like I needed to always have something on me, and that has made it my travel a lot easier.
Okay. So growing up in this small town, what was your initial challenge during diagnosis, and what other challenges did you find along the way?
Yeah, I think the initial one, I felt isolated. I had no one to talk to that it was experiencing what I was going through. You know, people would say, oh, I know this is like hard for you, but I was like, you really don't. Like, I just felt lonely. I didn't know, you know, people were watching everything I did. It was like, you can't eat this, you can't eat that. I felt like all of my childhood had been, you know, I don't even remember what it was like for life before diabetes at this point, because I felt like that's only thing I could focus on was trying to do a life with type 1 diabetes.
When you found yourself misunderstood, did you try to explain to people, or did you find it easier just to stay private?
I honestly just held back. I didn't really like talking about it. It felt like it was just a repeating record where I was saying things and people weren't understanding it. And I also was still in the process of learning it. So I just, you know, kept it to myself, didn't really talk about it unless I absolutely had to.
Did you eventually find people in real life that you could confide in?
I think I never really got the experience until after getting to college. And then once I graduated college and moving to an even bigger town, that's where I finally found those people where I was like, okay, there's a lot of other people that have type 1 diabetes. And, you know, there's a community out there, which I had never experienced before.
Is college where you met somebody with diabetes for the first time, or just where you met more people with different ways of thinking?
So I met my first person with diabetes. Actually, my freshman year of high school, there was only one other person, and he had had it since he was a kid, like young, since we were like maybe born or like right after that time frame. So that was the only other person I knew until I got to college and I started meeting other people. I was a member of the band and I was an RA. So I was like, okay, there's, you know, there's a small handful of people also at my university. But then once I moved to St. Louis, and a lot of my friends I met were like med students and they were young professionals. And that's where I started really getting involved with one of my really close friends to this day. He was also type 1 diabetic. And I was like, that's who introduced me to all these different types of communities and technologies, and which is really what helped jumpstart my learning more in with type 1 diabetes.
Do you think, I mean, there was that one person in high school, but you were young. Do you really think you were ready to build a relationship and around diabetes, or did you even know the reason why that would be important at the time?
I didn't. You know, I honestly didn't think about it. I just was like, oh, there's another person in my class that's kind of going through the same thing as I am, but they've also had it a lot longer than I have. So they've kind of got it down. They don't really talk about it. And I was like, well, I don't really have much to connect with them. Connect with them on.
Yeah. No. So now once your world expands, as far as different people, different backgrounds, different places in college, you see the need to connect in real life, but there's still only a few people, but there's still value in that, right?
Correct.
What do you think that value was at the time?
I think it was just what making me feel like I was just a normal person. I just wanted that. And I needed to know that, like, you know, there was other people out there with type 1 diabetes experiencing the same type of, you know, thoughts that I was having.
When were you first introduced to the Medtronic Champions community?
Yeah. So about 2 years ago, I was, you know, becoming more, I was looking around and I stumbled upon the Medtronic community. And I was like, this is something I really, really, I kind of need. You know, I said, all throughout these years, I was, you know, afraid to show my pump. I would wear long sleeves, like didn't want people to see my CGMs because I didn't want people to ask me questions. And, you know, I just felt so uncomfortable. And then I noticed seeing these people really in the Medtronic community, just, they embraced it. You could see them. They weren't afraid to show it. And that was something I was really looking forward to.
How is it knowing that your diabetes technology is such an important part of your health and your care and having to hide it? What did it feel like to have to hide that diabetes technology? And how did it feel to be able to kind of let it go?
I refused to go anywhere. Like, I would run to the bathroom. I just didn't want to do it in public because I felt like people were watching me. And that was just one of the hardest things I was trying to overcome. You know, I was fresh out of college, going into the young professional world. So, you know, going out on work events and things like that, I just didn't think to have it out because I was so afraid. But then once I did start, you know, embracing it and showing it, that's when the curiosity came. And it was actually genuine questions and people wanting to know more about the equipment that I'm on and how does this work and what does this mean and things like that, which it kind of inspired me because I was like, okay, people actually do want to understand what I'm experiencing with type 1 diabetes.
What did you experience when the internet came into play and now suddenly as easy as a hashtag and you can meet all these other people who are living with diabetes as well? Can you tell me how that is either different or valuable, I guess, compared to meeting a few people in real life?
Absolutely. I think if you look back from when I was first diagnosed to now, I would have never thought of, like, you know, searching anything for someone with type 1 diabetes. And now it's like, it's all I see. You know, you can easily search Medtronic Champions and you see people that pop up and you're like, wow, look at all this content. And I think that's something that kind of just motivates me, and which is how I've kind of came out of my shell and started embracing more and posting more on my social media with about, you know, how I live with type 1 diabetes. And I think that's something that I hope can inspire everyone else.
What was it like having more personal, intimate relationships in college with type 1?
I think it was kind of hard to explain, you know, just for example, like no one really understands like what a low is. And I think that was a very hard thing for me to explain. Like it can happen in any moment and I'm sweating. I'm just really like not all there. And I'm trying to explain like, hey, this is what's going on. I need your help. And I think that was something that was hard for me to, you know, I did talk to people about it. So when this happened, they were like, oh, you know, what's going on with you? I'm like, I'm actually a type 1 diabetic. Yeah. This is what's going on. I need your help.
What about once you've had an experience like that in front of someone, was it always bonding or did it ever have people kind of step back and be maybe more, I don't know, leery of your relationship?
After I would tell someone I had type 1 diabetes after some type of event or anything, like they were kind of more upset with me that I didn't tell them up front because they were like, you know, I care about you as a person. I would have loved to known this about you. It's not anything you should have to hide from me. And I think that was a lot of the realization that I was going through with a lot of people.
Okay. Let me ask you this. So now we talked about what it was like to be low and to have that more kind of emergent situation. But what about when your blood sugar has been high or stubborn and you're not thinking correctly, but it's not as obvious maybe to you or to them?
Yeah. So I go through my same experiences when I have high blood sugars. You know, I can tell, like, from my coworkers, for example, I didn't really talk to, you know, when I go, I'll backtrack. When I visit multiple sites for work, I usually don't announce it. And so sometimes I'm working throughout the day. I might have snacked, forgot to take some insulin, and my blood sugar is running high. And I'm a little bit more irritable. I'm all over the place. And I'm like, let me stop. Hey, guys, I need to like take some insulin. I'm sorry. I didn't tell you guys I'm a diabetic. So you may be wondering why I'm kind of just a little bit snippy. You know, so I like to make sure I do that now going forward, because that's something I noticed and it was kind of hindering me with my career because I was, you know, getting irritable because I'm working nonstop and I'm forgetting to take a step back and focus on my diabetes.
Right. Hey, with the advent of new technology like Medtronic CGM and other diabetes technology, can you tell me how that's improved your life and those interactions with people?
Yeah, I can. I feel confident knowing that it's working in the background. As someone, and I've always advocated said it, I have been someone that's really bad with counting my carbs. So sometimes I kind of undershoot it because I'm scared, but it allows me to just know that, hey, it's got my back if I forget something. And I think that allows me to have a quick lunch and then I'm able to get back into the work day because it's such a fast paced industry that I work in. So sometimes it is easy to forget. And so I love that I have that system that's keeping track of everything for me.
Let me ask you one last question. When you have interactions online with other people who have type 1 diabetes, what social media do you find the most valuable for you personally? Like, what platforms do you see the most people and have the most good interactions on?
Yeah, I've had tremendous interactions on Instagram. That's where I've kind of seen a lot of other diabetics reach out to me and ask me questions. I've commented and been like, hey, you're experiencing this too. But I've recently also been seeing TikToks and, you know, finding on that side of it, I didn't, you know, see the videos and the fun videos. And I'm like, I would love to do stuff like that, but I just never have the courage. So I'm seeing people make like just the fun engagement videos now, which I love, you know, really bringing that awareness to diabetes.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? Maybe you don't know this, but there's some sort of an age cutoff somewhere where there is an entire world of people with type 1 diabetes existing on Facebook mm-hmm. that don't go into TikTok or Instagram and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I do think it's pretty broken down by, you know, when that platform was most popular for those people by age. But your younger people, I'm acting like I'm 100 years old, but younger people seem to enjoy video more.
Yes, I think it's just because it's something you see. And so it's like, and I think the one thing, and obviously it's a big stereotype around diabetes, is you don't look like you have diabetes. And that's something I always faced. And so when I see other people that are just, you know, normal everyday people, and I'm like, they have type 1 diabetes just like me. They're literally living their life, having fun. That's just something you want to see it because you don't get to see people living their everyday lives with diabetes. And I think that's something I've really enjoyed.
Yeah. What are your health goals? When you go to the endocrinologist and you make a plan for the next few months, what are you hoping to achieve and where do you struggle and where do you see your successes?
I'll be honest, I was not someone who was as, you know, involved in my diabetes. I wasn't really focused on my health. And that was something that, you know, you go into an endocrinologist and you get these results back and it's not what you want to hear. It makes you nervous. It makes you scared. And so I personally, for myself, you know, I was like, this is my chance to change. I know there's people that are living just like me, everyday lives, and they can keep their A1Cs and their blood sugars under control. How can I do this? So I go in with, you know, I would like to see it down a certain number of points each time. I would love for my doctor to be like, hey, I see you're entering your carbs. I see you're, you know, you're not having lows. You're not running high too often. That's my goal. And I've been seeing that. And that's what motivates me every time I go to the endocrinologist, where I don't dread going. It's like an exciting visit for me.
So you like to set a goal for yourself and then for someone to acknowledge it, to give you kind of that energy to keep going for the next goal.
Yeah, I feel as a type 1 diabetic for me, and it's a lot to balance. It's a hard journey.
Yeah.
And so I want someone, when I go in, I want to be able to know, like, hey, I see what you're doing. Let's work together to do this. You don't want to be put down, like, you know, you're doing horrible. It's not going to motivate you, because you're already fighting a tough battle.
Right.
So just having that motivation and acknowledging the goods and also how we can improve, that's what really has been the game changer for me in the past 2 years.
Jalen, I appreciate you spending this time with me. This was terrific. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
If you enjoyed Jalen's story, check out medtronicdiabetes.com/juicebox. If you're not already subscribed or following in your favorite audio app, please take the time now to do that. It really helps the show. And get those automatic downloads set up so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back very soon with another episode of the Juice Box Podcast.